Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Okay, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, and this week, it's my pick. We are going back to the classic record from Fleetwood Mac, 1977's Rumours. Guys, y'all ready to do this?
Ready. Anthony, let's hear your tagline for the week.
I'm trying to think of something. How about this? It's the Audible Ecstasy podcast. We ain't nothing but secondhand news.
Not bad. That's a good one. Yeah, that works.
Doesn't make us look good, but I think this sounds pretty good.
I think it sounds good.
You must be a fan of that song. I see your username this episode is secondhand.
It's not that I'm a... We'll get into it.
Okay.
All right, boys. Here we go. Track number one. It's called Secondhand News. Secondhand News. So I do love how the song starts out. I think it's very catchy. The vocal styling of Lindsey Buckingham and the back end vocals of Stevie Nicks is a perfect pairing. I also love the rhythmic syncopation of that acoustic guitar. So I think it actually rings through, you know, throughout the entire song. So it doesn't stop. It's a nuance that, you know, that's it's there and it works. It's normally something that may drive me crazy because of that continuous, but it works for me. I think this song absolutely is a fantastic opening tune. It kind of sets the pace for what we're about to go into. It exposes your two main singers, I think, in the band at this point in time, with Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks. I think the song's excellent. I gave it an 8. Chris, what'd you think about Secondhand News?
It's a fun, peppy, upbeat tune. It absolutely sets the, you know, it's a good way to start an album, I think. It's not a real heavy hitter. I mean, we got some heavy hitters coming up on this one, but to me, it's kind of more the, I don't know, I'm not sure. I don't mean this in an insulting way or anything, but it's just kind of like, it's a little light compared to some of the other ones, I guess. I guess, Anthony, you probably got a whole lot of song facts. It looks like every one of these songs has like a link.
I had to dial it down just a little bit.
I won't get into the history, but... I guess the two singers, you know, it's kind of about them in a way that is in the song. I gave it 7. I think it's a great way to start the album.
Awesome. Anthony, Secondhand News.
Yeah, songfacts.com. It said this song was originally an acoustic demo titled Strummer, but when Buckingham heard the Bee Gees jive talking, he rearranged it with more audio tracks and the rhythmic effect from playing the faux leather seat of a studio chair to make it evoke a slightly Celtic feel. Kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, personally, I think it's a great way to lead an album in. It's peppy, upbeat, full of great classic rock sounds. Solid outro guitar, too, as well. The solo is good on that at the end. I enjoy it, man. I gave it an 8, too. I think it's excellent. I was kind of debating this morning if I wanted to go back down to a 7 to make it a great or an 8, but I wanted to hear that sample first before I kind of made my official, you know, and I think I'm going to keep it at an 8. It is an excellent, excellent tune.
It's an excellent song and excellent opener. So yeah.
Is Lindsey the lead guitarist? The one that does a lot of the okay.
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac. They went
pretty cool riffs he gets on this album. Different spots. Yeah.
Didn't they sort of go through a little change? They were more of a psychedelic band at one point in time, and then
they were early in their career. They were like a progressive rock, definitely psychedelic feel back in the '60s, late '60s, and early '70s.
And then when Buckingham came in, changed things, right?
Well, they were on the process of changing, and they brought in Buckingham with a deal that he would bring in. He told them that he would only join the band if Stevie could come with him. So that's what happened. They got Stevie Nicks, and of course she went on to become the main singer later on. You know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that about Fleetwood Mac, that they actually started out more of a prog psychedelic band in a way, and then
morphed. Yeah, they really were, man. It's like Genesis. Genesis did the same thing. Genesis was pure prog, and then they became very pop fashionable and you know, releasing radio-friendly songs later in their career. Yeah. Nonetheless, great way to start, man. We'll just move it up. Track number two, it's called Dreams. Chris? Dreams. So the bass ride throughout this song really adds so much flavor and color to the song. I mean, when Stevie's smoky voice comes in, you know it's going to be something special. The vocal harmony with herself, because that's, I think she's doing the backing vocals during the recording this process as well. I mean, obviously it fits so perfectly. I think this could really be a Nicks solo song. I know that I think she's primary writer on this. I mean, good Lord, when the rest of the band backs her, you know it's Fleetwood Mac in full force. I mean, I think it's a great follow-up to Secondhand News. And this is one of the songs that's really stuck with me in my entire life. It's something I remember from being a kid. I think it's somewhere between Outstanding and Perfection. I gave this one a 9.5. Chris, what do you think about Dreams?
Yeah, well, you know, there's no doubt this is an iconic song in my mind. And it's, you know, again, iconic doesn't mean anything anymore on our rating scale, but except to point out this is an iconic song. You know, it's did you say Stevie did the backing vocals as well?
Yeah. It's just recording, you know. It's,
you know, because like, here I was in my notes here, I'm like, if you listen to this through the headphones, you realize how like complex those backing vocals
are. Well, I mean,
too.
She's saying it a different tone, you know.
It's really cool, man. It sounds great. And I'm not sure I've ever really listened to this closely through headphones before, so it kind of caught me by surprise how great it sounded there.
Yeah.
And like you said, those smoking vocals that she has, man, they're on point on this. Very mellow, almost a 70s anthem. I think it's perfection, man. I'm giving it a 10.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Anthony, what do you think about Dreams?
Songfacts.com says this is Fleetwood Mac's only number one hit in the U.S. Surprising considering how familiar many of their songs are in that country. The Hot 100 didn't always reflect the impact of their songs, many of which showed remarkable endurance. Stevie Nicks recalled to the Daily Mail in 2009, she said, "I remember the night I wrote Dreams. I walked in and handed a cassette of the song to Lindsey. It was a rough take, just me singing solo and playing piano. Even though he was mad with me at the time, Lindsey played it and then looked up at me and smiled. What was going on between us was sad. We were couples who couldn't make it through. But as musicians, we still respected each other and we got some brilliant songs out of it." So that's Song Facts. I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, because these guys were going through, there was like three divorces going on while this thing was going on too. Mm-hmm. So a lot of just crazy behind the scenes stuff. Anyways, Dreams, man. Yeah, I love that thumpy bass that kind of glides across this song. It's kind of mixed that keyboard. I enjoy that. Stevie Nicks' voice is haunting. The chorus gets stuck in your head. Love the harmonies, the way the band backs up, you know, Stevie Nicks' performance. Again, no issues, no complaints like the last song. It's a 9. It's outstanding. And this is one of those that I debated about 9 or 10.
I'm surprised I'm the only 10 on this one. I figured you'd go 10 on this one.
I was the same way, man. Don't feel bad, Anthony.
I had 10 for a bit, and then I started looking. I had 4 10s at one point in time on this album. And then I was like,
it's hard not to do it. I know.
Even me, you know, when, fanboy.
When Jimmy said, you know, in our group chat there earlier, he's like, there's one automatic 10 on here. This is what I thought he was talking about.
I mean, no,
it's coming up.
It's coming up. It could be a 10.
It's not my only 10 of the night, but I tried not to go crazy with the 10s either. So,
well, like I said, this one right here could be a 10, and I don't know. Well, I'll tell you the reason why my 10 is what it is and why I didn't go 10 with the other two. All right, kids, let's go to track 3. It's called Never Going Back Again. This is an acoustic offering from Lindsey Buckingham. I think it's got some fantastic guitar playing. It's very recognizable from the instance the song starts. A very folky tune in my ears. I do love his higher vocal range as he is making it fit the track perfectly. But that being said, the song really never picks up a whole lot in my ears. I still think the song is very good, and I'm giving it a 6. Chris, what do you think about Never Going Back Again?
It was a very 70s hippie sitting in a park in San Francisco smoking some reefer vibes to me. That's kind of like what I.
Is there a problem with that?
I knew you'd say that. You always say
the way you said it, you're like, those hippies, those damn hippies.
No. It's just, that's the vibe I get from this. There, you know, it's just kind of, there's certain songs that just, I don't know, some of the Zeppelin's old stuff kind of has that feel to it as well.
And there's a problem with Zeppelin?
Sometimes. Depends. You know, to me, Lindsey sounds pretty good. It's a pretty mediocre song. I mean, it's okay. I gave it a 5.5.
Okay.
It's probably better than mediocre, but it's one of the lower rated songs on this album for me. It's just kind of basic. It doesn't move the needle much.
I got you.
Would you say it's one of the better songs on this album, Anthony?
What do you think about
it? I think it's up there, yeah.
Again?
I do.
Really?
You think it's going back again?
Looking at the hitters on this,
I'm not saying it's better than like some of the other big hitters. I'm just saying it's better than you guys are giving it.
It's mediocre for this album.
You're making it sound like fresh toilet paper. I mean, it's not that bad.
It's not my flush. I got 2 flushes tonight. Just
or I should say wet toilet paper, fresh toilet paper. You know, man, songfacts.com for this one, according to Q Magazine in June 2009, the inspiration for this Lindsey Buckingham pen song was a brief relationship with a woman whom he'd met on the road. Buckingham had only recently broken up with his Fleetwood Mac co-singer Stevie Nicks. So that's what inspired this one. So, anyways, man, yeah, I think it's a solid tune. I do love the way the song sounds with the vocals over the acoustic guitar. It really flows well together. It's nothing too complicated. It just kind of works for me, man. I'm digging it. I gave it an 8. I think it's excellent. So
fair enough.
But I like smoking reefer and sitting in a park in San Francisco. So, you know, it works for me.
Dodging the homeless. And
dodging the
all
homeless,
their excrement everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
The fresh smell of urine in the air.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to track number 4, Don't Stop.
Don't
All right, this is where the dividing factor happens on this record. This song is instantly recognizable. I do love how the entire vocal ensemble seems to partake just a unity throughout this entire tune. I love Christine's vocals and Stevie's vocals in the background and foreground throughout this song. I think Lindsay obviously doing the main vocals. It works just fine. I appreciate this song. I think it's mostly overplayed. I do think it's a great tune, but it's not the best by Fleetwood Mac. My ears, I'm giving it a 7. I think it's great. It's not their most played song. I mean, this is on this album. This isn't even the most played song, just so you know, when it comes to digital listens in this day and era. This song's barely in the top 10. I think it's maybe number 8 or something.
Really?
But shocking. Thanks. And it's shocking to me, to be honest. I figured it'd be higher, Anthony. But but I understand why, because it's not the best song on this record. It's definitely, I don't think it's the, I mean, it's definitely a top 5 song, but it's not the best song. I think it's, like I said, I think it's a little overplayed. There are better tunes. I like the next song better. I mean, a lot better. So, you know, that's just me. But the 7's where I stand. I think 7's fair. I do know it's an iconic song. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, iconic status doesn't really mean a whole lot this day and time. It just means, you know, what it is. It's iconic. But to my ears, I think it's great. It doesn't really, I know I kind of expect a 10 from you two, to be honest with you on this. But it just, for me, I can skip this one. It just doesn't do it for me. That's all. Chris, what'd you think about Don't Stop?
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it's iconic. It is an iconic song. There's no question about that. But, you know, we changed the rating scale a while back to where that doesn't mean anything in our, you know, it's just right. Just to note it. And I will say I'm glad we did, because this is a song like this is the reason we should have changed the scale. Because I really don't like this song, and I never have.
Oh, wow.
And I think part of it is because anytime a politician hijacks a song and uses it as their campaign slogan, I'm done with it. It becomes lame. It just becomes a lame song then. And that's how I feel about this. I would probably skip it every time it came on the radio. I don't think I've ever actually listened to it when it's on. I gave it a 5. It's a good song, but I don't like it, and I'm never going to like it. And something about it just comes across as extremely. I can see some old man like dancing around on the stage, and it feels lame. I don't know how else to say it.
I can understand that.
And it was almost my flush, so I'm, let's tell you, it's not, because there's
hot take, man. But,
yeah.
All right, Anthony, talk to us. Don't stop.
By the way, it has nothing to do. Sorry. I mean, Bill Clinton was probably like the coolest president we've had.
Oh, yeah, we've ever had.
It's not about the cool factor. It's just like anytime a politician takes, and it has that feel to it. It just feels like something a politician would have cranking over the speakers when they won an election. You know, it's lame. That's just it.
I kind of think I went too high then.
Well, not necessarily. It's listen, man, it's all in how you hear the stuff, guys. I mean, heck, that was not a shock, but.
Honestly, you know, I'll get into my song facts, but I gave my rating based on more. It's not one of my favorites by Fleetwood Mac, but I based it on what I think it is for Fleetwood Mac. That's the way I based it, and that's why I gave it a 10, because I think it is one of their more perfect songs. Because when you look at their whole discography, this is one of their best songs. I mean, personally, I probably would do a 7 or 8 myself, but. Yeah, but I gave it a 10 perfection because I think this is one of their perfect songs. You know, everybody probably would agree with that. So a little bit surprised to hear that from you guys. But
not everybody's going to agree.
Well, I just thought this song
would be the one of the easy 10s on the album because of just what it is in the pantheon of classic rock and in the pantheon of Fleetwood Mac's
right
career.
With cherry pie for me.
No, it's not that bad. It's not that bad.
Wow.
There's nothing.
It's hard to disagree. It's iconic, but there's, man, I just don't like it. Almost get like it. I don't want to hear that as soon as it comes on.
All right. Songfacts.com.
Hit it.
Christine McVie wrote this song about leaving the past behind. She and John McVie, Fleetwood Mac's bass player, were splitting up, which inspired the lyrics. This caused some awkward moments since John had to play a song written about him. Now, just think about that. Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks were also going through a breakup and writing songs about each other, Go Your Own Way in Dreams. And Mick Fleetwood was going through a divorce. All the tension in the studio didn't seem to hurt. Rumors is one of the best-selling albums of all time. So imagine playing a song about yourself.
That's what secondhand news was. You didn't say it in the comments, but it was about their breakup. And here they're both singing the damn thing, like, rafter. And it's crazy that people can do that.
There's so much stuff on Song Facts on this album. I'd encourage anybody to go to songfacts.com and just look at all the facts about these songs on the Rumors. Every song has something about it. It was hard to break it down this week.
Volatile time in their life. So no wonder. It makes sense.
I mean, what I wrote about this one is I think it's one of the all-time great classic rock songs. I mean, it truly is. Maybe not for me personally, but I feel like it probably is for a lot of people. You got the driving beat, the duet-ish kind of nature, the catchy chorus, the guitar solo. You know, band is firing on all cylinders. I gave it a 10. I thought it was perfection for them, but personally, maybe not as high, but...
I was going to say, what would you honestly
personally
give it?
Too,
personal though. Is what we. That's what I try to go. Honestly, what would you think personally? Would you rate it personally? In all seriousness,
I'd probably still go with a 9.
Excellent, 9, outstanding. Yeah, that's cool, man. I get it.
I think it's an outstanding song. I just kind of bumped it up a little bit because of what I think it means for Fleetwood Mac and what it means maybe for classic rock and that sort of stuff. I kind of factored all of those things in there together for it. So.
Oh yeah, no, I totally understand, man. I just I figured both of you guys would be high on that one. I thought I was going to be tipping the scale, so to speak, by saying hey, but it's just
if it comes on the radio, like if it comes on the radio, I let it play, but it's not something I go seek out, you know.
Well, to echo Chris's, if it comes on the radio, I'll skip it. I don't listen to it. I've heard it so much, I don't know what it is. We'll get into this a little bit later. I'll talk about it later. But
I will say, and I was hard on this song, but when I was driving down the road and I listened, like every time it would play, I was the urge to like hit fast forward was there, and I'm just thinking, if this comes on the radio, I'm never listening to it. So why would I give this a high score? It's just that's how I feel about it, you know. So
yeah.
It seemed fair for me to kind of go low on this one.
That's fine. I'm a little bit surprised. That's like the Screaming for Vengeance last couple weeks ago. I was like a little surprised by that one too. So
get a reality check.
It's a little bit sounds a reality check.
Killer album. Oh my god! All right, well, let's go ahead and go to track number 5. It's called "Go Your Own Way," Chris. Go Your Own Way. So Lindsay's once again allowing his writing and vocal style to take over and own a song. The buildup is absolutely fantastic. How it seems to intensely increase the pressure, if you know what I mean, as he starts getting like more vocal and vocal as the song goes on. And of course the backing ladies are present and they sound fantastic, but Lindsay owns this song. Honestly, I think it's a great follow-up to Don't Stop My Ears. It's a better song than Don't Stop. I know that it is the first single from this record, and released in 76, actually. And I can see why they released this one, because it's got an upbeat feel and it's got a little bit of anger in the vocals I can hear. I think it's somewhere between excellent and outstanding. I gave it an 8.5. Chris, what do you think about Go Your Own Way?
Again, I think it's an iconic song. It's definitely catchy, much better than the previous song. It's more of a rocker. As a matter of fact, I really like the outro, the way the guitar is on that outro. Yeah, Lindsay crushes that. I think it's a staple of the decade. I think this one is perfection. I gave it a 10. It's weird, man. I'm all over the place on this review. I know I'm looking. I see 10, 5, 10. Yeah, the next one's going to be great. It's a fair warning.
I think it's a top.
It's just,
It's a top five song of their all their music. Is a top five song.
I think it's iconic, and I think it's perfection for these guys. I think it's this is I would never skip when this one comes.
I would
on
imagine
the radio.
I've gone low on this one.
What's that?
I said I imagine I've gone low on this one.
Well, I don't know. I just think it's a great song. So
all right, fair enough. Yeah. All right, Anthony, go your own way.
It's almost kind of a hard album to review. It's one of those albums where it's almost too good. You know, it's so good that it's kind of hard sometimes to really find a way to put numbers on it. You know what I mean?
There's certain it definitely felt like a greatest hits album sometimes.
I know. It was tough for me to review some of these, too, because I didn't want to go, you know, I know I fanboy more than you guys do, but at the same time, it's hard as someone like me who does want a fanboy to kind of be a little more with an album like this because it's so good in so many spots. But, you know, songfacts.com, Lindsey Buckingham wrote this as a message to Stevie Nicks. It describes their breakup with the most obvious line being, packing up, shacking up is all you want to do, and concluding that he is better off without her. She can go her own way as far as he's concerned. Stevie insists that she never shacked up with anyone when they were going out, and wanted Lindsey to take out the line, but he refused. And Stevie Nicks told Q Magazine, it was certainly a message within a song, and not a very nice one at that. So he basically told her, you can go your own way, I'm leaving the damn line in. So, rough, man. The behind the scenes stuff, man.
That
studio had to be a mess during this.
God. I think there was cocaine flying too in there as well.
Oh, yeah. They were big cocaine people back in those days.
So, I would just love to have been a fly on the wall to watch that whole recording session. And, God, it'd been fun.
Good stuff right there.
Yeah, for me personally, I wrote two for two. This one might be as big as the last one, might even be bigger. It's just a 1-2 punch that lands. And like the last song, zero flaws, man. Band is just firing on all cylinders once again. I can see why it was a big hit for them. It's 10. It's perfection, you know.
Dude, so. I can see it. I had a hard time grading it myself, or rating it, I should say. Wow. All right, well, let's go to track number 6. It's called Songbird. Christine McVie, she steps in, takes over the vocals on this tune. She wrote this one. There's a sadness that is in her voice and also a depression that's coming out of her that overwhelms the listener. I do see a fence on this song. I see a fence that the people will fall on one side and absolutely love the song, and then there's going to be the opposite on the other side, people who just absolutely don't like it at all. I do fall on the other side. Something about the song's never really struck a nerve with me. It has moments of calmness and sadness, and something just doesn't make it stand out anything better than good to my ears. I think it's good, and that's really about it. I'm being generous, giving it a 5. Chris, Songbird.
Anthony, you're going to be angry after my review. Yeah. Would you like to go ahead and... Okay, well, here we go.
Chris's Flush of the Week.
You know, I like my ballot, so you knew I was going to fall on this one, so...
You know what? You kind of nailed it, man. Depressing, gloomy, decent ballad, but man, it just like... I would never listen to this if it weren't for a review. I would just skip this every time. Same. I mean, this is just the way it is. It does not get my attention at all. It's a meh. I gave it a 4. But you know, I'll say something interesting because I was trying to find some live videos from these guys off of this tour, I'm pretty sure this is what they closed with. I can't imagine closing with this. Like, psh, okay. It must have been a fan favorite, because why else would you close with it? At least it might have been, I don't know. I don't know the dynamics at the time. I don't know if, like, if Christine had, like, a lot of sway and was able to just kind of, like, bully her way to the front of the pile. I don't know. I don't know why this would be your closer. I mean, you've got, as much as I don't like Go Your Own Way, that would be a good closer, you know? Like,
even Don't
not,
Stop.
Not, no, I'm saying Don't Stop. I didn't know.
Yeah, Don't Stop.
I like the Go Your Own Way. But, like, you know, that would be a good closer. Like, Go Your Own Way would be an awesome closer. I mean, why this is, I don't know, man. Like, so I guess I'm not seeing what the lure of this song is, but it is very meh to me. All right, Anthony, gotcha. Go ahead.
All right, Anthony. Songbird.
It's just so funny. I'm getting tickled. Songfacts.com. Christine McVie liked to pen her songs from another person's point of view rather than writing about herself. She told Uncut, "If you take Songbird as an example, that was written in about half an hour," which is amazing to think about. "If I could write a few more like that, I would be a happy girl. It doesn't really relate to anybody in particular. It relates to everybody. A lot of people play it at their weddings or at bar mitzvahs or at their dog's funeral. It's universal."
Yeah, that fits.
"It's about you and nobody else. It's about you and everybody else. That's how I like to write songs." So that's what she wrote. So, and what I heard, they wrote a lot of, they're having so much infighting in there. I read somewhere that they were all writing their own songs and basically just recording them and putting them on the album. They didn't really do, I don't think he did a lot of collaborating. I think it was more like,
wow,
Christy's got a song. Hey, let's go do this one. You know, he's got a song. You know, that's what I kind of read that they did. So, but anyways, man, you know, I love me a good ballad. And I think this is beyond a good ballad. It's an excellent ballad. Christy's vocals are just about as haunting as Stevie's are on Dreams. I mean, it just, like, Dreams pulls you in. This song pulls me in when I hear it. I just love her vocals on this one so much. I do love the piano, too, throughout. It's just beautifully done. I gave it an 8. I think it's excellent for me, so.
That's not bad. Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, no.
It's just a beautiful song to listen to, and kind of reminds me of one of those old Joni Mitchell songs, you know, because they're so, they just pull you in so well and just, you know, love her music,
gotcha,
too.
Gotcha,
so.
Yeah.
But, for yeah. Sure.
Probably flushed a lot of Joni, so.
Probably. All
right, Joni Mitchell's got some beautiful music, man. I love her music.
Track 7, let's do The Chain. The Chain, instantly recognizable from the very start. Lindsey's and Stevie's vocals are meant to be in harmony, guys, and they're like kind of going back and forth with each other. You can hear it. There's a passion in their vocals. I said, this is the Fleetwood Mac vocals that I absolutely love. I love this vocal styling. Song facts won't matter much in this tune to sway my decision one way or the other. I've always loved it. It's one of the first songs I remember my parents playing on the record player back when I was a tiny kid, and it stuck with me. Lyrically powerful. What about a bass solo, Fro? You got to love that, dude.
I know.
You got to love that, the bass solo on this. Guitar-wise, I get it. Lindsey's no Yngwie Malmsteen, and that's what I tend to generate to. However, he doesn't have to be. He's playing licks that fit the song perfectly, and I have no complaints. This one is absolutely iconic to my ears and tons of others, as this is one of their most played songs in all of their discography. I think it's an amazing song. I think this is perfection. I gave this one a 10. Chris, what do you think about The Chain?
Yeah, I agree, man. It's, to me, the best song on the album.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most popular song, but it's definitely
it's
the best song
on
the album.
Too. Yeah.
And it's interesting. Anthony just said that these guys were all throwing their own stuff in an album. It's the only song that all of them wrote together and collaborated
Isn't
it
crazy?
On.
Yes,
and
still in my notes.
And it's the best song. I mean, I really believe this is the best song on the album. still in your notes. Sorry about that. So well, good. I just noticed that looking at that.
I know.
Man, it's catchy. I like all the harmonies. It's weird. It's like I wonder if these guys everybody's getting along at this time. And they're like, all right, let's go ahead and get in here and make one since we're all on the same page.
We're on the same room here. Yeah.
Maybe they wrote it early before everybody started breaking up. I don't know. Yeah, man. Easy 10. Best song on the album.
Awesome. Anthony, The Chain.
Songfacts.com. This began as a Christine McVie song called Butter Cookie, Keep Me There. So let's just take that in crazy. For just a minute.
Wow. Wow.
Which is available on the expanded edition of Rumors. I'm about to go check that out. The beginning of the track wasn't working. This is kind of crazy to hear this. But the band loved Mick Fleetwood and John McVie's ending, which was now on tape. So they count it back from the bass line, use the kick drum as a metronome. Nix gave them the lyrics for the verses. Buckingham and Christine McVie wrote the music and the chorus lyrics. Lindsay added the guitar over the ending, and The Chain as we know it was born. This is the only Fleetwood Mac song credited to all five members of their 77 lineup. Since various pieces were assembled to make the song, they all had some contribution. So that's just crazy. That's how amazing. A song will start when we're like, no, we like this part. Let's just count back from here and just rebuild it from this end. That's just, musicians blow my mind the way they do stuff with music like that all the time. Just, it's crazy. You know?
It's amazing.
But The Chain, man, yeah. You know, I love how the song starts, that driving beat, that simple plucking guitar. I love the way the intro builds into those vocals and those harmonies. It's just a jam from start to finish. Band is on point. Harmonies are there. Transitions are great. Bass is great. Guitar solo. I had this at a 9 initially, but I'm bumping it to a 10. This is one of my fence ones where I was kind of like 9, 10. And I wanted to hear the song again, and I wanted to hear you guys' opinion before I kind of made my final decision. So I'll make it a 10. It is perfection. So
was this their most streamed song, Jimmy? Was that what you were telling me?
It's not their most streamed song. It's their second most streamed song, at least on Spotify's ratings. But it's, you know, it's What's hundreds of millions of plays. I think number one is Dreams with a billion plays, just over a billion plays. And I get it.
And I'm the only one to give it a 10, by the way.
I gave it a 9.5, so, but that's okay. Well, like, plays don't matter.
I mean,
matter.
I could have done 10 on Dreams, too, but, I mean, I was trying
to. Anthony, I'm the same way. I could have 14. This is the one song in all of their discography that comes to my mind, and I remember loving it as a child, and it continues to this day. It absolutely is a fantastic tune. Fantastic tune. All right, let's go to track number 8. It's called You Make Love and Fun. So You Make Love and Fun, man. I absolutely love the bass and funky guitar songs throughout the very beginning of this song. I think it just absolutely adds to the greatness of this tune. I mean, it's Christine McVie written and led, and it's absolutely fantastic. This is the song that really stands out in her vocal and writing skills on this album, in my opinion. I mean, coming off the back of The Chain, I know it's going to be a tough one to follow, but this song does it so well. I do love the vocal harmonies and the backing vocals throughout the song. I know this is another song that's played a ton of times in my youth and is basically instilled in my childhood memories. I don't know if you guys caught it or not, but the guitar solo and the guitar riffs in between the vocal lines are fantastic. I mean, they just fit the song so well. Once again, Lindsey Buckingham's not doing anything extravagant, simple stuff, but it fits so perfectly and makes it stand out. I think this one may end up being underrated by my score, but I do think it's somewhere between excellent and outstanding. I gave it an 8.5. Chris, what do you think about You Make Love and Fun?
Yeah, definitely. It's one of these songs that kind of like puts you back in a place and time. I can almost have a memory of mid-70s riding up in the front seat of my parents' station wagon with this playing on the radio or something. I mean, it has that feel to it, you know. Definitely, it's a good mid-tempo song. I think it's Christine's best song on the album, personally, the one that she wrote and sang primarily.
Agreed.
Very catchy chorus. It's definitely a radio staple at the time. Love the melodies, background vocals sound fantastic. Like you said, Jimmy, nice little guitar licks in there. Lindsey does a good job with that. It's not over the top. It just fits the song perfectly. I have an 8, but I might bump it to 8.5 as well. It's a very good song. I really like it.
All right. Anthony, You Make Love and Fun.
No, You Make Love and Fun.
Thank you.
During the songfacts.com, nobody caught that, huh? Songfacts.com, during the recording of Rumors, the marriage of bassist John McVie and keyboardist and co-singer Christine McVie was ending. Christine started seeing the band's lighting technician, Cary Grant, and she penned this song about the relationship. Drummer Mick Fleetwood quipped to Q Magazine, knowing John, he probably thought it was about one of her dogs. So, I don't know where that was going. It sounded like a lot of bitterness in that spot. So, you know, I love that thumpy bass at the start of it. I love how that bass carries throughout the song. Digging the song too. It works. You know, I enjoy it. Guitar solo as well. I think it's an 8. It's excellent. I think songs
these guys never.
I prefer songs like this one when it comes to Christine.
Oh, God, come on. Did these guys ever learn, like, the don't defecate where you eat? I mean, they completely ignored that rule, didn't they? I mean, to me, this is, like, probably the worst case of that.
Yeah. I had a girl tell me that one time when I was asked her out at work. She said, you don't do that where you eat, basically, is what she was saying.
Yeah, so. But that's exactly what they're doing, and on a grand scale. And look, it's kind of like... I don't know. You know, I guess they went on to get through it and work. I don't know, but like it's the worst case scenario, man.
They said this album.
Groupies, just don't date each other if you're going to be in a band. That's all I can say.
Well, the crazy thing was like this, what I was saying with the song facts there, like she started seeing a lighting technician while they were making this album and writing a song about her ex. And he's got to perform on it about another guy. I mean,
it's insane.
But this album sold like... They said 10 million copies in a month or something bananas like that. Something crazy.
I would not doubt it. It's a massively huge, successful album. Huge.
Yeah. Tremendous.
Wow.
So.
Wow. All right, guys. So we're going to go to track number 9. I Don't Want to Know. Chris. Guys, so with I Don't Want to Know, man, the acoustic intro and the bass fill in, I mean, it makes this song sound like it was fun from the start. There doesn't seem to be that anger or aggression toward one another vocally in this song.
Just wait.
I can only imagine what this is about. But Stevie and Lindsey are in harmony, and it really elevates the song. Anytime those two are working together, I think just makes the song fantastic. I think it's a solid tune, and it's a tough position to follow up two of their biggest songs ever. So when you have to follow the chain and you make love and fun, that's a tough task. I think this song may have been a better closing song for this record, possibly just because it's a little more upbeat. But that's a discussion for, you know, later on down this review. I think it's very good, guys. This one I thought was solid, man. I gave it a 6. I think it's very good. Chris, what'd you think about I Don't Want to Know?
It's definitely a solid back half tune on the album. Kind of similar vibes to the Never Going Back Again.
Right.
Kind of very similar, but I think it's a little more peppy, a little more upbeat. I really like the way Lindsey and Stevie kind of like play off each other on this song. Their vocals, you know, both are really good on it. Yeah, I'll tell you, I gave it a 7. I think it's a great song. And as far as like back half of this album, I mean, the closer's better, but like, it's one of the better songs on the back half of the album, I think. So.
Oh, gotcha. Anthony, I Don't Want to Know.
Songfacts.com. This gets interesting. Apparently, Stevie Nicks, there's a lot to this, so I try to break it down. Stevie Nicks had a song called Silver Springs. I think she wanted on the album, and it didn't get on the album.
I was going to go into that later, yeah.
It got on the B side of like Go Your Own Way, they said, or something.
Nope. Yeah.
So this is where we're coming in at right now. She was upset about Silver Springs not getting on the album. So this says, Nicks continued, before I started to get upset about Silver Springs, I said, what other song, and he, Lindsey Buckingham, I think, a song called I Don't Want to Know. That's what he said. And she said, but I don't want that song on this record. And he said, well, then don't sing it. And then I started to scream bloody murder and probably said every horrible, mean thing that you could possibly say to another human being and walked back in the studio completely flipped out. I said, well, I'm not going to sing I Don't Want to Know. I'm 1/5 of this band. And they said, you can either A, take a hike, or B, you better go out there and sing I Don't Want to Know, or you're only going to have 2 songs on the record. And so basically with a gun on my head, I went out and sang I Don't Want to Know, and they put Silver Springs on the back of Go Your Own Way.
That's crazy. That is crazy. I didn't know that. That's insane, dude.
That's from songfacts.com. So that's just shows you what's going on behind the scenes. Personally, for me, I Don't Want to Know, this would probably be my flush of the week.
Wow, man, that's a good song.
This one just doesn't land for me. I still gave it a 6. I still think it's a very good song. Even at its that when it dips a little bit for me, it's still very good. You know, there's not any bad stuff on this album at all. It just has this kind of different vibe to it. It doesn't have the same sound as a lot of the other songs on here, and it's almost a little too poppy in spots and stuff. I don't know. Just something about it just didn't land for me. So.
Gotcha.
But it's, you know, got a good beat, good harmonies. There's a lot of good stuff in there. It's just, I give it a 6. It's very good.
Okay. That's still what I gave it. That's great. All right, let's go to track 10. It's called Oh Daddy.
Oh Daddy, you soothe me with your smile. You're letting me know you're the best thing in my life. Oh Daddy, if I could make you see, if there's been a fool around, it's got to be me. Yes, it's got to be me. Why are you right when I'm so wrong? I'm so weak, but you're so strong. Everything you do is just alright, and I can't walk away from you, baby, if I try.
Alright, so Oh Daddy. And this one's solemn and depressing from the start. McVeigh's vocals are typically fantastic to my ears, but this one must have a dark meaning behind the lyrics. I don't know. I can't wait to hear what Anthony's found on this one.
Actually, Jimmy, you want to know, there's not much on this one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, there is somewhat, but I took away the biggest part. And Mick Fleetwood was key in keeping the band together, is what it says in Song Facts, which is why he's called Daddy in this song. Mick Fleetwood is Daddy. So when she's saying, Oh, Daddy, this is all about Mick Fleetwood is what I'm assuming. So really listen to this song and think about Mick Fleetwood being Daddy. Why are you so right when I'm so wrong? Lines like that, it really changes the focus of the song a lot.
Well, you know, even before knowing that, I'm thinking to myself, the song really just never grabs me. It just doesn't do it. It picks the pace a little bit throughout. It just doesn't pick up my attention. I think this one's easily skippable. If I was going to flush one, this is my flush. This one is honestly, on this album, it's the worst song on the album, in my opinion. I gave it a 4. It's a meh. This might be the worst song I've ever heard by Fleetwood Mac.
Really?
I'm just going to say that. Disagree, yeah, I just... 100%. I can you think of a worse song on by Fleetwood Mac?
I don't want to know.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I would take this one over the last one any day of the week.
All right. Well, wow. It didn't do nothing for me, man. Like I said, I gave it a 4. I think it's a meh. Chris, what do you think about O'Daddy?
Chris's flush of the week.
Two flushes.
Two flushes.
You juvenile. Just a juvenile is all you are. That's all you are.
Jimmy's dead on, man. I gave it a 4 as well. It's idiots. 1A, 1B on these two Christine McVie songs, man. Like, it's just not good. I would skip it every time. It's depressing. I read that little tidbit about this being about Mick Fleetwood 2. Doesn't mean anything to me. It's just like, I guess these guys were going through a lot of turmoil, and he was maybe the glue trying to hold it together, if that's what this song's about. But I would never listen to this on the radio. If this came on, I would skip it every time. I wouldn't even give it a 10 seconds, man. I mean, seriously, it's a meh. It's almost bad, but I'm going to leave it at a meh. This probably is worse than Songbird, honestly, but whatever. They're both right there.
All right, Anthony. Oh, Daddy.
I mean, I think this has a nice vibe to it. Christy sells it with her vocals again. I think I just love the way her vocals sound on these songs, man. I love the way she sounds on it, just the way she sounds as a singer in general on these songs. Beyond those vocals, I like the ballady sort of nature of it, the spooky vibe. It's a very spooky song. I wrote here, if a song could be haunted, then this song might be one of them. So I really like that aspect of it. It's very hauntingly kind of song. So I gave it an 8. I think it's excellent. You know, I'm digging it, man. So I don't know, man. For some reason, these two songs just landed good for me this week. I don't know. I just...
Wow. Wow. That's great. I mean, dude, it's all in how you hear it. Like I said, I don't hear it, her, unfortunately. I think she is the weakest link in this one, you know, as far as the record. This is the worst song on the record.
It's like her and Stevie. I love their vocals so much, and I love when they branch out and do their own vocals. They just sound amazing as singers. So,
yeah. I agree. I mean, they do. They both have outstanding vocals. I just, like I said, the song just never grabbed me. That's all. All right, kids, let's move to the final song, track 11, Gold Dust Woman. Hit it, Chris. Gold Dust Woman. So this closing track in my ears has a funky start. It sounds like a dark and haunting version of Fleetwood Mac that we haven't really heard previously on this record. I love that smoky vocal style of Stevie Nicks. I mean, I believe this song is I think it's a very good song. I don't know if it's the best way to close out the record, but it is. I mean, this is certainly one of the ones I would have picked. I do think the peppier ones are a little better, but this adds like an air of just some kind of darkness to close out a record. I think there's points that Stevie Nicks sounds vocally passionate and what she's singing about, and this is why she is such a great vocalist. I mean, it may sound like I don't like the song. That's not true at all. I do think it's very good. Like I said, I do prefer an upbeat tune, typically close out records, but this is a solid closer. It's a 6 in my ears. I think it's very good. Chris, what do you think about Gold Dust Woman?
You know, I was looking at this, Stevie really only has 3 songs on here, and two prominent songs, and they're two fantastic songs. She's a tremendous vocalist. She stands out when you hear her, and I, you know, honestly, like when we went into this, I expected to see a whole lot more Stevie Nicks on this album than I did. It's a lot more Lindsey Buckingham than it is Stevie Nicks. And I don't know why, because she's so good. She was underutilized on this album. I mean, obviously her background vocals are fantastic, and they sound good on a lot of these songs.
Right.
But this is a great closer, in my opinion. There's a seething kind of, you know, on the live version of this, they kind of like erupt into like a little more fast paced,
right,
you know, guitar stuff going on there at the end of this. But there's a really nice build to it. I think it's, you know, she's there's like an X factor with her that the rest of the band just doesn't have, quite honestly. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent song. I would have probably closed with Go Your Own Way if it was me, just because I think that feels like a closer. But that said, this is a great song. I need to check out that Silver Springs. Anthony mentioned that. I've not listened to that. I'd be curious if it's... Did you listen to that, Anthony? I mean, I know it's kind of...
Dude, yeah, I did. It's a great song. Holy crap. I can't believe you guys didn't try that one.
Well, that Rumors has got an expanded edition. I'm sure it's on there somewhere.
It is on. Yeah, that's the re-release or whatever, yeah.
But honestly, man, I think this is a really good closer, and I think Stevie was very underutilized on this album. So.
No, I agree. All right, Anthony, what did you think about Gold Dust Woman?
Songfacts.com. Stevie Nicks wrote this song and sang lead. While Nicks has never been clear on the meaning, you can make a good case that it is about cocaine, which the band was consuming in quantity during the Rumors sessions. The lyrics, "Take your silver spoon, dig your grave," can be seen as a reference to a spoon holding the drug. So I don't know if
heroin.
Yeah, I don't know if it's... I don't know if I'd go with cocaine on this song, but you could interpret anything in this song.
Heroin's a gold dust.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So, like I said...
That's scary.
There's a lot. She's never said what it was truly about. It could be a lot of things this song could be about. And it's kind of appropriate they close the song with a really kind of spooky, dark song, because the album was so spooky. And just the whole vibe was so dark among all the crew. It was kind of a fitting song to close out the album with, I think. You know, and I wrote that it's back to Stevie's amazing vocals. And those vocals in this song helped to close the album out in a strong way. Digging the vibe and groove. What's not to like about it? And I like that spooky outro, too. It's really cool stuff. I give it an 8. I think it's excellent. So,
fantastic. All right, guys. So, before we go any further, Silver Springs, guys, it is a... It should have been on this record. I'm just going to tell you right now, you both need to listen to that song. I'm going to play an excerpt of it here in just a second. But I will say this. I got some final thoughts on this record. I'm gonna go ahead, and this is gonna be weird, you guys. I never ever do this when it comes to these reviews, for the most part, but I did make a mistake picking this album. I picked it because I know it's a staple in Fleetwood Mac discography, and it has a ton of history in my life. But initially, when I was trying to decide what my selection review would be, my mom was on my mind. This was her favorite band. Stevie Nicks is her favorite singer. She loved them, and I knew I needed to revisit that album. However, every time I tried to listen to it, it killed me. I listened to this record twice all the way through. That's all I could do. It was tough because that's all I could think about. My mom in the kitchen singing along killed me. And it's tough to think about it now, but man, I'm grateful for those memories, but it still hurts. This is... just tough.
You know, that's what music is, Jimmy. It brings back memories, and hopefully once, you know, things like that fade, you always have those memories, you know. So
right.
I think it's probably positive memories for the most part too, man.
It is. It's childhood memories, man. And it's just, I mean, it reminds me of my brother. It reminds us the road trips to go see the family, you know. Yeah. It's just tough. Overall, man, this is a great, great album. I gave it a 7.1, but it's definitely worth higher than that. I'm actually rounding this up to 8 because it's an excellent record. I do feel like Silver Springs was a missing key in this album because the song is fantastic. It's probably my only complaint of what they should have done. Man, I don't have a lot else to say other than this is a tough one for me, and I appreciate everything that you know, Fleetwood Mac meant to my mom, and you know what it meant to me growing up. But that's all I can say. Chris, what's your final thoughts?
See, now you're gonna make me feel bad for trying to
be critical. Don't. I was critical. That's why I did it, man. And it's just tough.
Well, I think what you can pull from what Jimmy just said is that make sure your kids don't listen to sucky music. So when they good memories, they'll have good music in their ears.
It's a good soundtrack for something like that. That's a good point, man. That's
it's
a good
soundtrack
point.
Of my
don't give them the Bee Gees. Don't let them have the Bee Gees as a memory. God.
My mom was a Bee Gees fan too. It's crazy.
Oh God.
She saw them in concert, man.
Glad you didn't pick that. But
yeah, don't go there, man. We're not gonna be kind to that.
Lord, my mom named dogs after songs by Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks from Little God.
Gypsy, yeah, definitely.
Gypsy, Sarah, Stevie, right? Nicky, Stevie, Sarah. Rihanna, I mean, God.
Definitely. Yeah, you're right, man. Jeez. Okay. All right. So here's my review. It was an interesting listen, and it was weird because I felt like I was, you know, high low, but the highs were high, and I hate to say it, like Songbird, Oh Daddy. I mean, it's just not good, and I never really did like Don't Stop. I'm aware it's an iconic song, but I love The Chain. I love Go Your Own Way. I love Dreams. I really like Gold Dust Woman. I thought I Don't Want to Know was a pretty good tune. Definitely think You Make Loving Fun is a fantastic song. I mean, there's some really good songs on this album. I just kind of like, you know, hit fast forward button a few times and you're good. You know, that's just kind of the way I look at it. It's weird. I came out with a 7.1 as well, Jimmy.
Oh wow!
So like, and that's great for me. I'm just gonna leave it there. You know, it's weird knowing the background. And I mentioned this to Jimmy. You kind of looked like you had to walk out of the room there a minute ago, and I was trying to expand a little bit. I meant this for my closing thoughts. But you know, the whole don't eat where you know what.
Right, right.
These guys completely ignored that, and it's most of the time an album would completely implode if that were the case. But they somehow make this probably their best album of all time with all that turmoil going on. It's really hard to believe they could accomplish that.
Right.
So I got to give them kudos for that. And there are some great songs on this album. That's pretty much all I have to say on it. Like I said, 7.1 was my final score. That's great. So I mean, it's a great album. It feels low because, like I said, at times it felt like a greatest hits album with some of the stuff that was in there. But there were songs that brought it down, and I can't ignore that. So,
Understood. Yeah. All right, Anthony, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, it's a great pick. Glad we got a chance to dive back into it. And I can see why, you know, this album is held in such high regard. It works from the opening song to the last. It comes highly recommended. I can't champion it enough. It's one of the all-time great albums for a reason. Came out to be 8.4 for me. It's somewhere between outstanding and excellent, and I am more than fine with that. So nice and sweet. I hear my kids going nuts upstairs, so I'm just shortening things down a little bit. My wife went for a walk, so the natives are restless upstairs. So.
I hear you, man. Holy moly. Good Lord. All right. Well, guys, that was fantastic. I'm glad y'all enjoyed it. I wish, you know, like I said, it was a little bit of a struggle for me for the past couple of weeks, but I did what I could, and man. Nonetheless, we got a pick. Chris.
And in this corner, weighing in at 165 pounds, it's the blues rock guru, the master of podcast production, and the man who cannot stop the battery. It's Chris's pick.
Hell, I thought long and hard about this one.
Oh, God.
I kind of wanted to get back to, you know, we kind of started this podcast to talk about stuff we listened to in high school, right? And a lot of the stuff we review now, we never listened to in high school. This album, I listened to in high school. This album, I saw these guys my junior year in high school at Freedom Hall, snuck a pint of Jack Daniels in during this. It was on this tour. I'm going with the 1990 album, The Razor's Edge from AC/DC.
Oh, my
God. Some pretty good tunes on it. I've been listening to it a few times this week. I think you guys will enjoy the trip down memory lane. So I say that's what we do. And we haven't listened to much AC/DC on here other than like a comparison where we took their two best albums and threw them against each other. So.
And we did their latest album.
That's true. We did do that. That's true.
So that's awesome. Great pick, man. Great pick. Anthony, I know you're not doing a whole lot this summer, but you got anything coming out this week? You had something drop last week.
No, I didn't.
Was it last week or was it week four? You had something drop recently.
I haven't dropped nothing recently.
Really?
No.
I could have sworn I saw it pop up.
I have an episode written for my Ghost from the Coast podcast. I just got to record it. I was listening to something about Roswell recently and kind of put some ideas in my head of what I think Roswell may have been. So I'm going to try to get that out in the next couple of weeks or something. But I will recommend Evil Dead Rise if you get a chance.
I watched it. Yeah.
That's a fun movie. And The Devil's Candy, if you can find it, is highly recommended too. That the last 20 minutes, oh boy. It's pretty suspenseful. But they use a lot of metal in there. They have Slayer's thrown in there a little bit. Metallica's in there a little bit. I think they might have a Pantera song in there. They got all kinds of metal in that. So they close with a Metallica song. So
Yeah, so a lot of I know that the Metallica, the date expired, so people can start using their music in their movies without having to pay those massive.
Really, but this came out in 2015, I think. So it
still would have been old enough. Yeah, For Whom the Bell Tolls was 84, so it would have made it past the 25-year mark.
Really, I didn't know that because I saw that was it Zombieland? They played For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Yeah.
At the start,
it opens with it. Yeah,
because I was sitting in the theater and it came on, and I was like, oh my God, it's Metallica.
It was when they were on the roller coaster near the end, right? When they started playing.
It was at the very beginning. It's like
when he's running from the zombies.
Is this Zombieland 2, isn't it?
No, it's the first Zombieland because I haven't seen the sequel yet. Double Tap. I haven't seen the sequel.
Sequel's fun. All right, guys. Well, heck, man. This has been, depressing for me somewhat, but nonetheless, it's a great album. I can't deny it. Nonetheless, I'm looking forward to revisiting Razor's Edge. I haven't listened to that one in a minute, so that'll be a fun go back. All right, guys. For the Audible Ecstasy Podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is it.